Welcome to A View from 22 Special. I'm Fraser Nelson, editor of The Spectator, and I'm joined by James Forsyth, our political editor, to discuss the two by-elections last night in Greater Manchester and Clacton-upon-Sea in Essex. So, James, what were the two more startling results, the UKIP victory in Clacton or the near victory in Heywood?
I think last night was a testament both to UKIP's reach and to the lack of enthusiasm for the two main parties. So, in Essex, UKIP win Clacton with an absolutely thumping majority, 12,000. That strongly suggests that Douglas Carswell will be able to hold the seat for UKIP come the general election next year. And then up in Lancashire, we see UKIP running Labour incredibly close in one of its strongholds, Heywood and Middleton, coming within 600-odd votes of winning that seat. But this is a result that should really worry both parties just a few months out from a general election. Normally, Labour is the main opposition party, would be expected to winning by-elections, increasing its majority in these seats. It's obviously not. It has a massive Northern UKIP problem. And then for the Tories, the UKIP victory in Clacton was less surprising, but its margin and its was a reminder that UKIP really are succeeding in mobilising popular enthusiasm in a way that the Tories are struggling to do.
And the Liberal Democrats as well, they were on the worst ever by-election result, 1% of the votes. I mean, Nick Clegg has got just as much to worry about as everybody else from this, doesn't he?
Yes, except I think in some ways Nick Clegg is resigned to his fate. The Lib Dems have a song that they sing at their annual conference called Losing Deposits. So I think this upsets them slightly less than the other parties. But I do think it's a sign of the kind of the complexity, the changing nature of British politics. And in a way, UKIP are fulfilling more than one of the roles that the Lib Dems used to fulfil. They've obviously become the protest party, the by-election specialists, but there's also something else going on. The Lib Dems were emerging as a party that were the opposition to the Tories in the south and the opposition to Labour in the north. UKIP are becoming that to some extent. Our politics is becoming so regionalised. There are whole huge swathes of seats that the parties don't expect to play in. I think it's quite remarkable that Clacton, which is not a kind of, it's not Kensington and Chelsea, it's just a seat that Labour say, we weren't ever going to win there. And the same goes for the Tories in Heywood and Middleton. What you are seeing is the main parties have pulled back from the seats that they don't think are winnable, and UKIP is surging into that space.
Of course, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if I don't think it's winnable. I'm struck by the fact the Tories said that Clacton wasn't winnable because look at the demographic, relatively poorer, a third of them are pensioners, lots of people on welfare there. Now, once upon a time, Labour would have said, well, in that case, if these are the less advantaged people in society, there are people. Let's go and win that. Except this time, both of them seem to have said, we can't win there. This is now UKIP territory. So do you think it can be said that there is now such a thing as UKIP territory?
Well, I mean, if there is such a thing as UKIP territory, Clacton is it. You know, these poorer coastal towns on the east coast of England are where UKIP appears to be strong. I think that's why the result of Rochester and Stroud, when that by-election comes up, is going to be so interesting. Because that is not natural UKIP territory. I mean, Clacton is, in terms of demographics, the most favourable seat to UKIP in the whole country. Rochester and Stroud is not. But if the Tories... Now, Labour should be competing that, in that, you know, this is Bob Marshall Andrews' old seat. They held it until recently. They really should be a force there, and the Tories should be able to hold on to that seat. If UKIP win in Rochester and Stroud, I think the Tory party will go into panic, but there's also real reason for Labour to worry too, because this is the kind of seat that a one nation big majority winning Labour party should be winning.
Of course, if Labour was going to win the next election, it should have run up a string of by-election victories by now. That's typically the way in British politics. Do you think what we've seen in the by-elections last night is a sign of a four-party politics to come, and that we can look to UKIP winning, I don't know, half a dozen seats at the next general election, maybe more?
I think it would be more than four-party politics at the next election. I mean, it's one of the things that makes it so hard to predict. You'll have, what effect will the SNP surge in Scotland have on Labour's Scottish strongholds? How will the Greens do? You know, they're currently ticking on along at about 5% in the polls. If they were to become a stop-off point for left-wing Lib Dems, who are not going to vote for the party again because it's gone into coalition with the Tories, then a central plank of Ed Miliband's electoral strategy collapses. I think the next election is incredibly unpredictable because no party seems able to seize it to offer a prospectus of a country that the country finds compelling. I think one thing that is almost certain is that the party that wins the next election isn't going to have much more than 35-36% of the vote.
Now, if Labour and Tory strategists were to join us in this podcast, they would probably say, look, the politics of by-elections are very different to those of general elections. In general elections, they're decided by a handful of swing voters and swing seats, and our message has been honed to those people, not people in places like Clacton, or indeed in Greater Manchester, where there are big Labour majorities. So, to that extent, do you think that there's a limit to what we can learn from these by-elections when it comes to predicting the general election?
Well, I think there are two things worth noting here. The first is that by-elections are obviously different. You know, what's going to be the big Tory squeeze message against UKIP? It's going to be, if you vote for Farage, you get Miliband. They couldn't really use that in Clacton because it was obvious that this morning Ed Miliband is not the Prime Minister, even though UKIP have won the Clacton by-election. So by-elections are clearly different, and people do use them as a chance to kick the government and the like. But my mind last night, as I was watching the coverage, kept coming back to a piece that Peter Oborne wrote for The Spectator, many years ago now, which was about how this emphasis on swing voters, this micro-targeting, had opened the door to the BNP. Now, thankfully, the BNP is now a spent political force in Britain. No one needs to worry about it anymore. But I think that same thing has provided this opportunity for all these insurgent parties. I think what is going on is that parties have taken their base for granted. You know, I thought it was remarkable in the Scottish referendum, where you saw Labour Party people privately admitting that what was scaring them was working class turnout. You know, we've got some, our political parties need to find a way to reinvent how they do grassroots politics and to find a way to stand for causes that rally in the way that they used to in the old days, that easily rally 40% of the population to them.
Yeah, but well, the problem has been quite vividly displayed in Clacton last night and in Manchester and in the other places where by-elections have been held over the last couple of years. But isn't it the case that, what, we're 7 months to the general election, these lessons aren't going to be learnt in time and conclusions implemented by then? Aren't we looking at a problem which is going to take years to fix rather than months?
I think that's probably true, but I also think that these things can change very quickly in politics. I remember covering Barack Obama when he was a rising political star in the States, and it was said at that point that it was impossible for anyone to piece together a big electoral college majority, that America had become so divided between red states and blue states that we were in for a series of a very narrow election wins based on piecing together that, you know, the 270 votes you need to win in the electoral college. Obama then had a blowout win in 2008, winning states that people like North Carolina and Virginia that people had thought of as solidly Republican. So I think politics can change very quickly, but I think what the country is waiting for is what I would call the kind of 40% plus politician, the national leader who can assemble a far bigger coalition.